Welcome back, everyone. I'm Austin, and this is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. You guys got a great episode lined up for you this week. I am sitting down with Maddie Scholar of the Red Letter Project. If you guys aren't familiar with Red Letter, we're going to get into it. Obviously, we're going to hear Maddie's story. We're going to hear all about, you know, how she got started into training, what her, you know, inspirations and motivations have been, what keeps her going, right? And obviously what led to Red Letter being created. We're going to talk about all kinds of good stuff. I had no idea who Maddie was or what the Red Letter Project was, but she was actually one of the instructors at the HTA Range Day event, which we talk about all the time on the pod here, but she was one of the instructors the first year I went back in September of, that would be 2023. I did not get a chance to take her course. But looking at the course listings, I go, oh, okay, that's who Maddie is. And, you know, that event is actually, it's coming up again. You know, I guess probably take a second here to shout them out. We don't get paid for that or anything, because I know some of you guys listen to this and like to give really snarky feedback about ad time and things like that on podcasts that you get for free. But the HTA Range Day event, it should be, I want to say it's like September 27th, 28th this year out at Ben Franklin Range for a third or fourth year running now. And it's a fantastic event. If you guys don't know about it, what it is it's a 100% charity. And for the money that you pay to get in, you get to fill your weekend with courses from reputable instructors from the Northeast, but honestly, Jared from Orion Training Group, he's not able to make it this year, but usually he makes the trip up and he's from, you know, like the Baton Rouge area in Louisiana. So it's not really the Northeast, but it's a charity event, and all the money that comes from the charity event goes to Deliver Fund. And if you guys don't know who Deliver Fund are, they're an organization that work and partner with law enforcement agencies across the nation to help fight human trafficking and all its evils and in its many, many forms and applications. So HTA Range Day, that's what it stands for, is Human Trafficking Awareness. And then Range Day at Ben Franklin Range, usually have a wide variety of subjects you can take classes on, from like handgun to carbine to CQB and whatnot. And like I said a moment ago, that's where I first became familiar with Maddie and with, you know, the Red Letter Project and her teaching and all the good stuff that she has been doing to help the community in ways that and we're going to get into it. I don't want to dive too far into it here on the introduction, obviously. But I think the work that she's doing in the community is A, awesome, but B, it's different, you know, and I feel like in our community, it is difficult at times to find people that are doing this work for the right reasons, for the good motivations. You know what I mean? Like, there's tons of training companies out there, and that's cool. Like, I'm down if they just want to teach people. People are trying to make a few bucks. I ain't got a problem with that, man. But there are companies that are out there just trying to make some money, and then there's companies out there that I think, or companies, organizations rather, that are out there that are trying to make an impact. They're trying to change their community for the better. It's not just a monetary thing for them. And I think we're going to find out here when we sit down and talk with Maddie in just a moment that's the category that she and Red Letter and by all means, the staff or cadre, or I think you're supposed to say cadre, I think. Everyone really likes hearing that. It's like the real kitschy, cool phrase when everyone gets brought on with a training company, they get to say they're cadre. I'm not throwing shade. I just, it's funny because, you know, if you just say, oh, I'm training staff at whatever company, it's somehow like less impressive in some people's minds than saying, oh, I'm part of the cadre at, you know, whatever, I don't know, whatever organization or institution. I think that's a military thing, but I'm really not sure. Because again, if you guys are listening, if you're new to this podcast, I am not former military and I'm not former law enforcement. I'm not even current law enforcement. I am full-time civilian for 35, very soon to be 36 years. You guys, I'm getting up there. I'm getting old and, you know, back aches and body aches and all kinds of other fun stuff that comes with breaking into your 30s, and soon we'll be breaking into my 40s, and then it's really going to be downhill, man. It's going to be wild. But it should be a really good episode this week. I think you guys are going to dig it. Before I get over to my conversation with Maddie, though, we have some partners here that make the Prepared Mindset a weekly occurrence, right? If you guys are just listening for the very first time, welcome in. We're so happy and thrilled to have you. If you came here to hear about Maddie, if you're a follower of hers, if you enjoy the content that she creates and the message that she puts out, very, very happy that you're able to join us for this discussion, as I am with all of our guests. But we have a couple partners in the industry that enable me basically to create this content on a weekly basis, whether it's the podcast discussions that I'm putting out with guests, whether it's the Instagram content. We have a YouTube channel where I'm dropping weekly videos. I mean, mostly weekly, but we're dropping videos and content there all the time. And the supporters and sponsors we have here are able to make that happen by supporting me, providing me with some stuff. All that good things that come with sponsorship. So I want to take a moment to tell you guys all about them, because they're outstanding companies, and truly in this industry, who you spend your money with matters. And I think both of these companies are some outstanding dudes doing some outstanding work. I want to steer you guys their way so you can support them like they support me. And Prepared Mindset, our mission to bring more information to all of you. And that starts certainly with custom night vision, you guys. Night vision's a game changer, man. It is literally the superpower that you can buy. You know, when we look at the broad scheme of all the skills and capabilities out there that can make you more resilient, that can make you harder to kill, right? All the whatever kitschy stuff that people like to say about survival skills, night vision is probably the only one that you can just bust out the plastic and purchase for yourself with very little additional investment other than time to learn how to use it, which is obviously lengthy. But if you want to learn how to see in the dark, right? You want to pick up your very first night vision unit, head on over to CustomNightVision.com, you guys. They have a full selection, a complete lineup, if you will, of single tube and dual tube devices. Even quad tube devices, are a possibility if that's something that you so choose to dig into. But you get to the website, again, CustomNightVision.com, and on their landing page, on the homepage there, you have two big blue buttons. That's either a monocular builder, which monocular, for those of you that are maybe not, I guess, Latin majors, is a single tube device, and binocular, or two tube, binocular builder, right? And whatever housing you're looking for, so whether that's the PVS-14 for your very first single tube, or something like the articulating RNVG housing, or the MH1, or the DTNBSs, whatever you're looking for, right? Custom keeps a full stocked lineup of the best housings available on the market, and you can pick your tubes, and they're actually pictured through a Hoffman machine, so you can pick the tubes you want, whether it's from NNBT, Photonis, Elbit. They even have a few of the L3 tubes that are soon to be leaving the commercial market. They still have some of those in stock there. Never a better time to head on over to CustomNightVision.com than right now to go pick up tubes if you are in the market for some good L3 intensifier tubes. Now, whether that's white phosphor, that's green phosphor, that's totally up to you. And if you guys have questions on all of that, you can head on over to the website, CustomNightVision.com. In the lower right-hand corner of the website, there's a chat icon. You can reach out to Trevor. You can reach out to Ben or Kevin. We actually just had Kevin on a couple weeks ago, and you can ask them, you know, what's better for me? What am I looking at? What are specs? All those good things. You guys, Custom Night Vision is a tremendous company based out of Houston, Texas, selling some awesome, awesome products, you guys. Huge fan of those guys. Kevin, the discussion that I had with Kevin was actually really hilarious. And if you guys are looking for a laugh, jump on over after this recording and check that one out. But I do also want to take a moment and say thank you to 100 Concepts, you guys. Tremendous gentlemen making some awesome products there. Their company motto is do good, be dangerous, live free. And they came on the scene a couple years ago, you guys. It was almost kind of just out of nowhere. You start seeing these light caps online. Hey, what are those? It looks like a really good idea, because every flashlight has a reflector built into it. That's how the technology works. And when we're talking about being in the field, when we're talking about camouflage, and we're talking about being effective and capable, you have to consider those things, right? So their flashlight cap was a incredible innovation in the market when we had been spending years and years trying to, you know, MacGyver together bikini covers from our favorite scopes, or trying to, you know, use every piece of junk you could to try and make a functional light cap. They came in and innovated a concept, and they've continued to innovate that concept, you guys. They went from just the shock cord and Ranger bands to the shock collar system with some shock cords, so it's much easier to install that. They went to their new ruggedized sorry, with a rubberized texture design. So they're bringing better products to you guys all the time based off your feedback and real end user needs. Again, 100concepts.com is the website. Head on over, check out the entire catalog, everything they have to offer, including lights, optics, and now even lasers. So big thanks to the team over at 100. Jonah and those guys are just tremendous, have been a supporter for a couple years now. If you're joining us for the very first time, you guys, those companies are outstanding. Been with them for a while, and they're big proponents of what we're about here and the messages that we spread. But like I said, this week, I'm sitting down with Maddie Scholar of the Red Letter Project. We're going to talk training. We're going to talk, I'm sure we'll get into culture a little bit. I feel like anytime I sit down with somebody who is kind of ingrained in the community, when we're talking about training, when we're talking about development, we're talking about growth, we're bringing people in to this training community, this tactical ecosystem, right? Everyone loves when I use the word ecosystem to describe how we all, you know, interact with each other, because we're really not a community. We like eat our own. We like to shit on each other. If you don't believe me, go look at like my comment sections on YouTube and stuff. And it's actually pretty gnarly in a lot of instances. This is not a community. It is definitely an ecosystem more often than not. But when it is a community, it's really, really cool. Great example. We got a bunch of people traveling down to Texas from all over the country to help provide aid and support for the victims of the flooding down there. Our thoughts, our prayers, certainly with all of those families as they continue to fight and continue to struggle through the recovery and the rebuilding phase that certainly is not going to be a quick or an easy endeavor. But big shout out to the community. People are stepping up in big ways to help those people, to bring supplies, to donate their time, to help. I know there's a lot of people that appreciated the help from North Carolina that headed out that way because they were on the receiving end of that not too long ago, and are doing what they can. You've seen it on social medias and everything. It really is outstanding. When we are a community, and we behave as such, it is a, it's a pretty outstanding thing, man. It's really, really cool to see. But like I said, this week, sitting down with Maddie, we are going to, guys, I could keep going for probably another 10 minutes here. Maddie is my guest this week. So without any further delays, I'm just going to cut us on over to my conversation with her. Here we go. Maddie, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said it in the intro, I had no idea who you were or what you were doing up until a couple of years ago at the HTA event, which I think, you know, great opportunity. I know instructors come together there for a pretty awesome cause and everything, and kind of been following a little bit of what you've been doing here and there, you know, over the last probably year and a half. I know there was a break there, I think, for your service and stuff where things were kind of quiet for a minute.
I kind of went off Instagram for a while, so I appreciate the support through that.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. Have you introduced yourself to the audience, talk a little bit about who you are? Maybe, I don't know if you want to get into a little bit of what you do in the military, because you mentioned, you know, some of that, but let's start there.
Sure. So my name is Maddie Scholar. I currently own a company called the Red Letter Project, which is a firearms training company. We've been in business for around 5 years now. It's what I do full time. I was also a part of the Coast Guard Reserves for a very long time. I just finished up a 6-month deployment with them back in March. So I'm back to doing, you know, what I do with training full time, and I really enjoy it. I get to work with a lot of really awesome people. We've taught over 5,000 something students in the last 5 years.
Wow.
I also get to work full time with my mom, who's an instructor under my company. So it's a really awesome time. We have a big mission focus. We're a faith-based company. So that's a huge part of why we do what we do, is we believe that, you know, God places a very specific emphasis on the value of human life throughout scripture. And we believe it's important to protect it and teach other people how to do that as well. So that's part of why we do what we do. Let's see what else. I have a dog named Peter who's sitting right next to me, and he's the best boy ever. He's my best friend. Yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, no, I'm super jealous that you can like coexist with your mother peaceably. Like my mom is not that, very much not a firearms person at all, but she is starting to come around.
Good.
It's funny. I don't know how many, like, I'm assuming you deal with a lot of beginner shooters, but I get, I'm at the phase now where she's warming up to the idea. Right. And I get all the really good questions. Like, I want to get a gun, but like a little one. I'm like, mom, that's, You're
You're like,
not,
no.
it's like, take, I was like, how can I make you understand this? I go, take the engine out of dad's Ram and put it in a Volkswagen Beetle, and that's the problem that you create. And
Right.
you need to get something like, or what if I, what, can I get a gun that like won't kill somebody? Like, mom, listen, I feel like you're worried about the wrong, I think we're worried
Right.
about the wrong things right now.
That's
So it's
crazy.
really awesome that you get to do that with her. That's gotta be
Yeah.
really, really cool.
It's amazing. She's my best friend. We do pretty much everything together. I live about 10 minutes down the road from her house, so it's funny because I know a lot of people are not able or willing to work with family, but for us, it's really worked out. I really enjoyed, spending time with her because you don't always get the opportunity in life to do that. But not only that, apart from her just being family, she's a phenomenal instructor. Like, she actually came from a very high level elite gymnastics background, so she was
Wow,
able
okay.
to carry over a lot of the training experience she had into instructing firearms after she mentored under me for a couple of years. We went through kind of a mentorship program. I made her an instructor a couple of years back, and now she has full-time clients. Like, she has her own client pool and everything. She teaches her own classes, and she's really, really good at it, like I said, because she has that training background. And I think training and instructing kind of translates across different sports and different areas of focus. So it's been really cool to watch her, just take it over and dig her teeth in and do a really good job.
Yeah, and that's I my background is in music, and I taught that for a long time, like 17 years. So yeah, it is really interesting. It almost, because it's like I see it's like its own skill set. Like if you understand how to teach, train, how to like progressively build people, that methodology as a whole, I think, to your point, right, can be carried across those lines from, in this case, gymnastics over to firearms. It's less about the skill you're teaching and more about like how you're teaching it and how quickly I think you're trying to push people through the progression of skills. And I
Absolutely.
think that's when you start to see like either the wheels fall off with a poor instructor, or you start to see like, things really start to happen. Like, hey, they get it, the student's picking it up, and I'm sure you've seen that too.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, she is part of the reason our training program is designed the way it is, because it was kind of modeled off of how she used to coach gymnasts through higher levels of sport. So I think, like, that's maybe something we could talk about is training structures and like methodology behind that, because I think there's a lot to learn from other sports. And I think there's a lot to learn from people who are really good at the psychology of other sports and learning and things like that. So yeah, she's been awesome. She's been so helpful to the company, but like I said, also she's my mom, so I get to hang out with her all
Yeah.
the time. It's great.
So how then if is I guess your background like with the family or anything, is like shooting part of like how you grew up? Is that how you ended up with your like your service and then starting the company and I've seen clips. I know you shoot competitively and stuff. Like how did you get involved?
So actually I didn't really grow up shooting that much. It's actually funny, like I don't think I put hands on a pistol seriously until I got into the military.
Okay.
And I actually remember, like, the first time I ever did a mock qualification for, like, with the Coast Guard, I like totally bombed it. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I was so bad at shooting. Like, I was so bad. I was very thankful that there was a few guys at my unit that helped coach me through, and a few instructors at the academies and whatnot I went to that were willing to put the extra time into me, because I was a slow learner. Like, I'm one of those people that, like, academically, like writing, reading, like presenting things, that's my area of like what I'm naturally good at. Anything in the physical realm or athletically, like, I might look athletic, but like I do not pick up on things very fast. So I was a very slow learner when it comes to shooting. The difference is that I think I was very much willing to put the time and the energy and the effort into it. And it's funny because what, 8, 9 years later, something like that, now I teach shooting for a living. So it just kind of goes to show that as long as the character trait of being dedicated and willing to suck for a while is there, like, you're good. You'll get there at some point.
Yeah, it's with anybody trying to learn anything, it's like people, it's funny to me the number of corners and where people try to like they try to cut corners, and like, oh, I'll get, I'll get a better trigger, or I'll or a lighter trigger, or I need a shorter barrel or a longer barrel or a bigger muzzle brake. And it's like if you really want to know the secret to getting better, it's just practice. Like
Absolutely, yes. with the right method, like with the right methods too, so you're not building bad habits. Because I had a lot of bad habits too. I was able to pass quals and do pretty well for a while, but it wasn't until I got into classes with some of these like really, really good competitive level people that were teaching a totally different style of shooting that I really connected with it and was like, oh my gosh, this makes sense. You develop over time, and also older methodologies are eventually phased out and replaced with things that work better. And you have to be open-minded as you go through your career and through training, because things can change. And if there's a reason why and it makes sense, I think it's good to be open-minded towards it.
I think that's something that our community or our ecosystem, I think, talks about a lot, is that is being open-minded. We don't really embrace it. We talk about it a lot, like, hey, we have to be willing to accept new ideas. And then when new ideas come along, we're not always,
We're like, oh no, this isn't good. Get away from me.
I mean, it's got to be like the right combination, of like who's presenting it and what's their background. And then it's got to be, I mean, I don't know. I could say, as I'm like sitting here walking down that idea, I'm like, no, because you look at stuff like first thing comes to mind is like the Hydra mount for rifles and optics and stuff, right? And it's like, those guys were all SEALs. They should have the golden ticket to whatever they say being good. And that just hasn't happened. So it's hard to, it's hard to hit that nail on the head, really, with understanding how the community is going to respond.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree.
But yeah, I mean, shooting development, I mean, any skill, right? Like, you have to be willing to hear the input critically, right? And understand that. And this is where I think a lot of people lose it, in my experience, is that they see it as like a personal thing. They see it as like not, I don't want to say attack, because it's not really attack, but they see it as like a, like an insult almost, like to like, I can do this. Like, you're saying I can't do it. Like, well, no, I do you experience that with your students when you're trying to, get them over that hump of sorts, right? And fix those issues.
So it kind of depends, honestly. I have a very we work with a very, very specific group of clients, probably a little bit different from the people that you usually interview on this podcast, I'm assuming. We work specifically with beginners that are either brand new or they're at the level where it's like intro level-ish type people. And what we specialize in is taking those type of people, putting them on like a 6 to 8 month progression, and getting them from the point where they've never touched a gun all the way up to where they're either shooting their first competitive match, or they're fully equipped to conceal carry in all sorts of different outfits, or they're able to do all the advanced level skills. But we really try to target clients that are at that very beginning stage of their journey, because we enjoy taking them through that entire process. But back to your question, really, I guess with our group of clients, I mean, we do also have intermediate and more advanced level shooters come into our program as well. But typically, when we're dealing with beginners, the only pushback I usually have when teaching like fundamentals and stuff like that is like old school military dudes who are like, but 30 years ago, I learned how to like use my sights this way. And what I've learned is like, as long as you can break things down and articulate exactly why what you're saying is going to work, as long as you can break it down and articulate it and give them the whys behind it, everybody knows that like, oh, okay, this makes sense. And as like, if you can communicate that, I haven't really struggled too much with breaking through those boundaries. Of course, there always is some leftover ego. Like, out of all the students we've taught, we've had a couple that just you're not going to get through to them, because they've already decided before they walked into class what they want to learn and what they don't want to learn. But at the end of the day, the only thing that keeps people from learning fundamentals is ego. So if there's no ego involved, then we usually have no problem with it. But ego is a problem that I cannot solve for somebody. They have to fix that on their own accord.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like we were talking a moment ago, about being a good teacher and everything. I think that's one of like the hallmarks of a good instructor or a good teacher or just a good educator, regardless of realm, is you can explain things multiple ways. And I'm not saying you're going to have every answer for every piece of the minutia, but you can explain it, and I want to say justify, right? Because when I was teaching, I kind of hated when people were like trying to demand that I explain why I'm teaching things a certain way. But there's like a level of patience involved, and then like, hey, I get it. You're trying to like, you're one of those people, you just ask like 30 questions and then you get it and we're good. And again, once you experience that a couple of times, you're like, okay, one of these, and you okay, I just got to work through this with you, and then we'll move on.
100%. I'm definitely one of those people that like I kind of collect little analogies and things that I've found that works and what doesn't work. I'm a big data person. So back in the day, like when I was first starting with instruction, I would literally record how people responded to certain analogies, if that makes sense. Like if I said something and I saw a light bulb go off, I would literally make a note of it. And over the span of, because way back in the day before I scaled the business to where it is now, I would be on the range all day, every day, 8 hour days, 6 to 7 days a week. All I was doing was teaching back to back to back. So that was an opportunity for me back in the day to gather a ton of data, not only on how to teach better, what students respond to, but also on the business side, like how to sell classes, how to upgrade packages, how to do all these things. It was just basically a giant data pool that I tried to take advantage of. So yeah, I would literally like I would have like kind of a bank of analogies that I would pull or references or ways to explain things. And each class would be a little bit like it would be talking about the same material, but I would explain it differently and see how people would respond. And when I got light bulbs, I knew that I was saying something a good way, so I would record that. Or if I said something and I got deer in headlight look, I would scratch that from my like my mental I guess list of things that I should and shouldn't say. So it's like 5 years of doing that. You get to the point where you know how somebody's going to respond based off of previous information you've gotten, right? So it's very easy to for a student to walk in the door based on the first initial conversation you have. You can kind of tell what they're going to understand, what they're not going to understand based on their background. Like if it's a prior athlete, they're probably going to relate a lot more to like mechanical movements and things like that. If it's somebody like a teacher, they're probably going to relate a lot more to breaking down the whys and the hows and like the five
The
W
logic.
type of thing, the logic, right? And you can just kind of go off of that. So I always kind of joke around with mom. I'm like, when I was teaching her, I was like, teaching is literally an art form. It is different every time. You should be tracking data. You should be like figuring out what works instead of just saying the same thing over and over and over again and expecting the students to understand it when realistically, if you have the time and space, you're doing this as a for a living. That should be your number one goal is to figure out how people are responding to the words you're saying.
I mean 100%, and it's is wild that we have a community full of people that are still not understanding that component of it. Because I think, and I'll say this, I won't, put the words in your mouth, but also like the law enforcement side, I know in the military side in some avenues, certainly in civilian space, that is a huge miss by people who, and you can have all the passion and the desire, right, to want to be a good teacher, right? But unless you're willing to invest in that, and there's, I will even say, I think there's some ego in that too. You have to like some of the favorite things that you like, because it works in your head that way, doesn't
Yeah,
mean
what
it's
it's
going to
easy to
work.
say.
And that's the thing where a lot of guys go, oh, I just love to, I love to teach, I love to help people. It's like, I get it, man. That's cool. You kind of suck at it right now. And let's just be real. Like, you need to take a real objective look at what's working when you're trying to help people and what's not. And, and if you really want to make that your craft, invest in it.
Exactly. And like what's the saying? It's like the road to good intention is paving gold or something like that. But I don't remember what the phrase is, but basically the point is you can have the best intention in the world, but if you're not willing to do the extra additional work of again tracking the data, recording yourself, asking students how they feel like the class went, like getting the feedback. I guess I think a lot of people are afraid of getting feedback because feedback hurts the ego. It's makes it kind of sucks. Like you go home, you don't feel as good when you get negative feedback. But a lot of times
True.
people are not going to give you the real honest feedback unless you ask them. But the good thing is the more you ask them, the less you'll actually catch the negative feedback on what's it called? Unprompted. So you can prevent students from having a bad experience simply by asking like your regular clients, hey, what do you think I could be doing better? Hey, what do you like about the program? What do you not like about the program? Hey, what do you understand about this topic we just talked about? And where's the gaps? And that's honestly, it's not only how I approach instruction, I also very much try to approach it in the business side of things as well. Because not to get off on the side tangent, but this is a hill I will die on, is that There are also a lot of instructors or trainers across industries, fitness industry, shooting industry, whatever it is, that are very, very good instructors, or they're very, very good shooters, but they're not willing to put the time, effort, and like learning into the business side as well. So their message is never going to reach the right ears because they're neglecting that portion of it. So I think there's a balance, right? I think if you approach a tr like wanting to own a training company, there's more things to think about than just being a good instructor. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, 100% it does. There's the business side of it is for a lot of people the part that they don't enjoy, right? You just want to do what you love, and who doesn't? I get it.
Right. I just
And
want to
I've
shoot
had,
guns.
yeah, I mean, and I've had so many people on here who are, incredibly qualified and talented instructors, and you get comments and they like, I hate the social media game. I don't play the social media game. Or we even have, training companies here in Michigan where I'm at. And I go, yeah, I don't know anything about those guys. Like I hear some people say good stuff and they're like, oh yeah, they don't play the social media game. Like you get something to brag and be proud of. And I'm like, it's 2025.
Yes.
Does anybody, have you like, how marketing works? Like I, as a consumer, I have options. I'm probably not going to throw a couple hundred dollars at a class where I have no idea what I could even hope to potentially bring out of it.
I totally, it's actually funny you say that because I like literally probably 2 hours before we got on this call, I made a post about how much I hate doing social media, but it's necessary.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
That's actually funny you bring that up, but social media, it makes my stomach hurt how much I don't like doing content. However, if the content is going to help another person and it's going to help me grow my business and it's going to give me personal development skills, like being able to talk on camera, I feel like is a skill, being able to market yourself is a skill, being able to talk and articulate in ways that a vast amount of people are going to understand. Like, not all skills are fun to build, but they're very beneficial. And again, highlight on the fact that your videos, your content, if you're doing the best work you can and you're putting it out there, somebody is going to benefit from it, whether they tell you or not. So it's like, even apart from just the marketing side, the content, as much as it sucks to make, I do think it is relevant. I do think it is very important. And like you said, it's 2025. If you're not even thinking about marketing your company on social media, you're going to have a really hard time growing it. Now, I know a lot of people are weird about the confidentiality thing, especially if they're in the military, which I completely respect. Like, if
Yeah,
that
of
were
course.
ever a thing for me, I would agree as well. But if you want to get ahead in this game, it's unfortunately just part of it at this point. You're right, it's like 2025. Like, social media has taken over. It's not billboards, newspapers, and like TV commercials anymore. It's who can get the most posts in front of the most eyes.
Yeah, 100%. It w when you started Red Letter Project, is this like, was this even a thought at the time? Like the depth of like the marketing and the business, like did you have any idea, or was it kind of just jump in and figure it out?
No, so okay, this is a really good question. So it's actually funny, right? So business is not as like I don't have a single like before I started Red Letter, I didn't have a single desire to start a business ever. It didn't even cross my mind. My goal was to I was actually at the time when COVID happened, I was living over in England getting I was finishing up my master's degree. I was on a Rotary Global Grant scholarship, so everything was nice, pretty, and paid for. My life was super awesome. It was the best thing ever. And all of a sudden, COVID hit overnight. And what happened was they shut down the country. I got stuck in my little, tiny little square apartment for like 2.5, 3 months. Ended up having to come back to America. And that totally disrupted all of my plans because I was supposed to be over there for a lot longer. I had intentions of coming back and doing different things with my life. I actually picked up teaching firearms as like a little side hustle just in the meantime until I was going to move back into Eng or back to England. Now, with COVID, we all know that COVID never really ended. So the opportunity to go back to the country never happened. So I kind of got catapulted into the business life, like unwillingly, like kicking and screaming, actually. And it
Yeah.
was because,
Jeez.
like, the first year I was teaching, eventually it turned into, like I said, it was a side hustle, but it was technically full time, because I call it side hustle because that wasn't my original career intention. But it was actually funny. My mom, again, the person that works full time for me right now, was the one that was like pressuring me to be like, "Hey, you need to actually formally make it a business and like get serious about it because this could go somewhere. Are you sure? Like, she was the one that kind of pushed me into it. And I resisted for like a good year, year and a half, maybe even longer on learning anything business related. I was like, I'm not that person. I want to just like shoot guns and teach and have fun. And I want to go work for blah, 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 blah. Like, I wanted nothing to do with it. And to be honest with you, I'm glad I did at that time because I can look back on myself and be like, wow, you were dumb for that. You wasted 2 years that you could have been learning.
Look, that's how you
But
learn, though. Yeah.
you know what? It's funny because like eventually I got to this point where I started to notice things where, you know, I'm like, wait, I basically am my own boss. I can rearrange things however I want to. I have a lot of control over my schedule. I really enjoy like making this thing my own. Like it's like my pet. It's like my baby, right? Like your business turns into like a kid. And then what happened was is actually I got really, really serious with the business when I started to realize that it was not sustainable to work 40, 50, 60 hour weeks on the range all like for the rest of your life, right? It's not sustainable. It's not
Right.
good for your body. It's not good for your mental health. It's not good for anything. And I was just, when I started getting as burned out as I was, I started realizing, okay, I need to take a step back because I will not be able to do this for any longer unless I figure out how to grow this thing without me having to be standing on the range 24/7. And at that point, that's when I started like really digging in and learning skills like sales, learning about like how other people have scaled businesses, hiring mentors, like just reading everything I possibly could about it. And I'm really glad I did because I'm in a very different spot in my life now than I was two and a half, 3 years ago. And it's funny because the business is like the business part of it is what gives me joy now. It's like my passion is like literally the business part that nobody likes. Like I live for that now. So it's just funny how things kind of turn around, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I work in business. I work in finance in my day job, and I always feel like it gives me this unique perspective when I look at some of the stuff we see in the community. Like, and I don't ever talk about it. Like, I never message anybody like, hey man, that you could probably do better if you just did this and this. Or even like when guys like do write-ups for drills and stuff, and I'm like, even just formatting on stuff, I'm like, I would do this differently, but that's okay. Whatever. I'm just gonna keep moving and let my autism settle, and
That's what it is, man. It's like I just weaponize you weaponize it. It's so much fun. It's like a giant puzzle. It's like, okay, how can I take this thing that's like this size now and within 3 months make it this size? I don't know. I don't know if any other career field, I'm sure there is, but like for me, I'm starting to kind of view it as like, I don't know if there's any other career field that would give me the space to be as creative and as like just ambitious as I am right now. Like literally, if my business does not succeed, I can't pay my bills. And that type of pressure to me is enjoyable. Like I really, really enjoy it because I feel like I have to have goals in my future. Otherwise, I kind of lose my sense of direction, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, I love it. 100%.
So
It's yeah.
I fully embrace it now. Like if you had asked me this question, what I say, like 3 or 4 years ago, however,
Right.
whatever the timeline was, I would have looked at you like you were crazy.
It's funny when you look back, even just a couple of years in life sometimes, right? And like, yeah, that wasn't on the roadmap. I wasn't supposed to, and honestly, I started this podcast during COVID. I was like, I never Never, ever, ever thought that I would do anything like this. I was like,
That's awesome. Well,
no, I'll
congrats.
just
That's
hang
great. I
out.
love hearing when like things didn't go the way as planned, but God is using them for a great purpose, and we won't always see that until, you know, years down the road. But yeah, it's same thing for me. I had to trust that God, for some reason, didn't want me going to work for who I wanted to work for. He wanted me working in this specific capacity. And I think it's because we've been able to help a whole lot more people than I ever would have in my original path. And I had to learn to be okay with that. It took me years to cope with, hey, this is the direction our life is going. I love it, but it's not originally what we had planned to do. That was a hard pill for me to swallow for a long time.
So what, like, how, I guess, so how did you get to what you wanted for Red Letter? You know what I mean? Like, Teaching firearms, cool. Like the passion's there. Like if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. Like everybody feels that one, you know. But
Right.
with what you do and what Red Letter does is different than just, you know, well, I don't say just, that's always like a detractive term, right? But
I
other
appreciate
companies will offer like a 1 day, 2 day, maybe even like a 4 day class or something, and then, you know, it's kind of a rinse and repeat in some regards.
it.
I'm not trying to be derogatory to anybody else when I say that, but I think with some of the stuff that you've posted and things I've seen, like the retreat that you posted about on social media, and the way it sounds like you're approaching your students and your classes, where it's very like beginner level focused. And so how did you like shape, you know, what you wanted this to be, and how did it get to like what it is now?
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that. So a couple different parts to that, I think. At the very center of all of this, we decided as a like a company together, me, mom, the other contracted staff, everybody who's ever been involved in Red Letter, we decided that sh teaching shooting is completely meaningless and purposeless unless we keep Christ at the center of it. So at every retreat, we are, yeah, we're teaching shooting, we're teaching combatives, we're teaching vehicle stuff, we're teaching force on force, we're doing all these things, but at the end of the day, like the core part of Red Letter is the Bible study and the mission work that we're doing. We work with a lot of domestic violence victims. That's kind of like our thing, that's what we focus on. And everything can always go back to like that center message of if you have a platform, use it for something apart from just making money, or use it apart from something of just being educated. Like we want to be purpose-filled. Because the way I view it is you might teach somebody to protect themselves, right? Physically. However, if you're not helping them develop spiritually, it doesn't matter if they're alive or dead. Like, right? It's
Right,
like
right.
that matters more to me than anything else. And so what I viewed Red Letter as is a platform to help spread the message of the gospel, to help develop people personally and spiritually. And then on the other end of it, then we also help them achieve their goals, get comfortable, and whatnot. And I really do truly believe that since we've kept God so central to our mission, that He has blessed what we're doing. And we've been really privileged to work with some awesome instructors. Some of my best friends work for me. Like I said, I get to work with my family. Back to your question, at the retreats, it's really interesting because our main focus at the retreats, typically, especially in the last like year or two, is our force on force training, which is very, very different, I think, than what you see the typical force on force classes look like, if that makes sense.
Okay.
To my understanding, most force on force is like simmunitions, CQB, shoot house type of environment. That's not what we do. That's not our game. That's not what we, even think about. What we focus on doing is taking some sort of situation out of the news, maybe a situation that an instructor or another student has experienced before, and we replicate it in a safe environment to help people work through those things, specifically when it comes to abuse and violence. So, like a lot of the times when we have people coming to us saying, like, hey, I need to learn to protect myself, or hey, I've had this trauma or thing happen in my past, help me work through it. What we can do is we can surround them with people who are going to keep them safe, give them role players that are going to be as realistic as possible, and help them work through those tough moments as like almost like, and it helps heal through those scars and injuries and the wounds, right? We're kind of like at our events, we are very much as realistic as possible with our force on force training, but it has the central theme of like, it doesn't typically revolve around the gun stuff. A lot of the times, we'll put people in scenarios where they have to acknowledge and recognize what's going on. Because a lot of abuse happens verbally and mentally and emotionally. It doesn't always onset physically right off the bat, right? So we will help people identify what's going on and be like, hey, like, what'd you think of that scenario? And they're like, I thought I was gonna have to pull my gun. I'm like, okay, well, what was going on in your head? What were you saying? Well, how did that conversation go? And they were like, yeah, I recognize that I shouldn't be talked to in that manner. Or I recognize that, like, if I were in a relationship with a person like that, that would be very dangerous, or it could be very dangerous in the future. Or, these things that I think most people don't think about when it comes to quote unquote force on force. We like to focus on the mental aspect because I think that can help prevent a lot of violence and a lot of bad situations than just learning how to conceal carry and shoot. I don't know if I described that well.
No,
But
that all sounds incredible. I mean, when you think about domestic violence and just the numbers, awful, the awful shit you hear. I know, like, just thinking on it right now, like, I know I've had people I went to high school with who died from being victims of domestic abuse. I've had family members that were victims, and you think about like that stuff, and you never. Like, I mean, obviously nobody ever in high school is like anticipates that that's going to be a consideration in life. And we'd all obviously wish that that was true, you know?
100%.
And with so much of the other training and stuff that we look at in this community, we talk about avoidance being like early detection and avoidance being two really key skills. Again, as we like try to relate it back to concealed carry and active shooter and stuff, because probably, I assume, from a business perspective, that is more enticing, and it's, or unfortunately, because of tragedy, it's easier to sell. But like what you're doing, it sounds like is almost like a, not almost, it's like a therapy that's built into, like, or I know there's probably a real name for it, like where you're able to like not cope, but like overcome your traumas and fears in a safe environment and in a way that's going to help you
Move
mentally,
past it.
emotionally move on.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And it's like we're very careful because we understand that, and we're very clear with people. We're like, we're not licensed therapists. We're not here to give you medical advice. We're here to help you move through this scenario with your permission. Because a lot of times what happens is I'm approached first by somebody who has something that they want to work through. Otherwise, if I'm not approached first, we'll just do a tame scenario that's typical of like somebody's breaking in the house or somebody is having this medical incident, whatever it is. But we are very good at being able to tailor and cater these situations if somebody needs it. But it's never forced, right? And like I said, the greatest part about Red Letter is if somebody wants to work through something, they're not alone. We have a huge community, like we have a massive community of women and instructors and people who are willing to stand by the person side by side. It's very much one of those things where it's like once you have been a part of one of our events or part of our community, it's like we're always here, doors open, open door policy. You got my phone number, you got my email, whatever you need. I'll show up to somebody's house at 3 in the morning. I have in the past because that's what it's about, right? It's
Really?
not about just taking somebody's money, giving them a good experience and telling them to go home. It's like, hey, like if you're going through something, we're here to help you. We're not, like your parents, we're not your family. We're a separate party that doesn't have stakes in the game. We just want to help. So it's like those parts of Red Letter I really enjoy. Those parts are oftentimes like when we do classes like that. It's funny, my best friend Chris, he works for Red Letter as well. He's a contracted staff member, and it's always funny because we go through these force on force classes. And he's always like my little battle buddy instructor in those classes because sometimes, like it affects us too. When we do some of these classes, it's like we're not heartless people. We are professional and we help people work through things. But at the same time, it's like, it sucks. It sucks that we have to put ourselves in an environment to where we have to practice and train for these things. So it's really good at these events to also watch out for your staff, make sure that they're doing okay as well, because sometimes it can get emotional and that's okay. Like it's totally okay. It's a safe environment. You're not gonna be judged for it. So that's something I really enjoy. Let's see what other, you also had asked me about the pathway program. So this is something that, like I said, mom actually came up with a long time ago. Basically what we believe in is students stop retaining information after a few hours of learning, right? Everybody knows that. People get tired. Eyes start to glaze over. And then at that point, it's like a 6 hour class for a beginner. How much are they really going to get out of it after the first 2 hours?
It's a
So
lot,
this, it's a lot for a beginner shooter. You can really only retain 3 to 5 new pieces of information like at one sitting before you just start info dumping things. So again, back to the data thing. Back when we first started doing training curriculum and stuff, we were literally testing what was working, what wasn't working. I did the 6 hour classes. I did 1 hour classes. I did 30-minute little sessions with people. I tried everything I possibly could get my hands on and get people to agree to doing to figure out what worked best. And what we found was that 2 hour blocks of time worked really, really well for us, and we were able to tier it off in different and like basically break up what you would typically learn in like a 2-day class, able to break up those blocks of instruction into 2-hour bits of time into like 6 or 7 levels over a longer period of time, so that people were retaining little bits, every couple weeks or every couple months or so, with practice in between. And what we have found is that that's a lot more efficient than teaching for 6 to 8 hours, where the instructor also gets really burned out and tired after doing that, right? So it's an
Right,
instructor thing too, because you're not going to teach as well the 6th hour as you are the 1st hour. And obviously, this doesn't necessarily, like, I'm not saying that instructors are wrong by doing that, because there's a time and a place for it. But for brand new shooters, my personal opinion is that it's better to give it in little bits at a time. So that's what we do with the Pathway program. And if I remember correctly, this was modeled off of, like I said, mom's gymnastics program years ago, when she was teaching elite level gymnasts, and raising these young girls up to be really, really good gymnasts. That's what she found worked best too. So we've just rolled with it over the last couple of years, and we seem to have a lot of success with it. I'm really, really happy it's gone the way it is. And we've changed classes out. We've changed curriculum probably 500 times, again, like trying to figure out what works best for people. But eventually you get to the point where you're like, all right, I think I figured out what, for the most part, right now works the best. So, we'll make small tweaks here and there now. But right at this point, we're kind of settled, which is really, really nice.
Have you ever read the book? I think it's called Building Shooters by Dustin Solomon.
Oh, I
And
know which book you're talking about. I haven't read it though.
it's so it he actually does a really I would never have been able to write this book. He did such a great job with it. I don't know how you even figure out half of this shit, but like talking about, well, there's two of them. There's building shooters and mentoring shooters, but in the building one, he found a really good way to articulate what you just talked about with like 3 to 5 pieces of information and how many neural connections the human brain can handle and like where those connections start to degrade, like the info dumping and the overload. And we call it burnout. And it, he was able to like scientifically articulate what's going on in the brain and stuff. And it's a real thing. And to your point, that's why it's important to like, hey, we've been going for like 1 hour and 45 minutes, guys. How about we take like a break? It doesn't have to be like an hour. Let's just take like 20 minutes and everybody get water, go do something that's not this, and then come back and we'll pick up on either the same thing or something else. And he did a really good job. I recommend the book to a lot of people. Honestly, when you look at the number of things that go into beginning learning, because I think we as experienced shooters, we take it all for granted. Like it's hard to think back to the beginning and be like, hey, I really struggled understanding how to load the magazine properly or how to, unload the magazine and make the gun safe properly and effectively. And it's like those things where you figure it out, you're like, oh yeah, it's fine. You just drop the mag, you rack the slide, no big deal. But for somebody who's completely new, like, did they
Different
know
game.
how to do that? Did they just put the gun down and walk away? And then it's like, well, that's a whole nother problem we just created right here, you know?
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing with beginner shooters is like they're learning a lot of mechanical skills, whereas like the more advanced shooter who's taking like a 2-day competitive class or whatever, right? They're picking up nuggets and tips and like little things here and there. They're not learning how to drive a car for the first time. Very different. Like big motor mechanical skills, like things like how do I like load this magazine when my fingers are slipping around, or like how do I grip the gun when I've only done it one time? Like, those are a lot of like bigger things to learn, which is why I think for beginner shooters, it makes sense to break it down. For more advanced shooters, there's all sorts of different methods. I think I'm sure the same, I know the same stuff still applies with like the learning retention and everything. But I'm just saying, if like there's somebody that's listening to this who's an instructor who specifically focuses on beginner shooters, highly recommend finding a way to break down the program in a way that is like digestible for people who are brand new at something. I always compare it to like if I were to go learn how to swing a golf club for the first time, I would be an absolute hot mess. And if somebody gave me 6 hours of information, I would probably like my brain would turn off within the first 30 minutes. Like, I'm sorry. But it's just learning new things, like brand new things, is hard. It's difficult, you know.
And I think even if you're not an instructor, if you're a student listening to this, like I always found it really interesting trying to observe people when they're trying to teach and explain things as somebody who would go take firearms classes and the things that would jump out to me, like if you go take a course on something. It could, shooting, CQB, sustainment. I mean, it could be any or anything outside of this realm, right?
Yeah.
And you find that the instructor is one of these people that's like, hey, they're not giving you 3 to 5 pieces of information. They're giving you like 10 to 20. And then you go ahead and you try to attempt whatever skill or whatever you're trying to do, this micro drill of whatever you're building, and you make your very first mistake, they stop you, restart. They won't let you move past that point.
It's
And
frustrating.
it's, there's, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. There's like that, it really, I think, lowers the student's confidence, but B, it shows that the instructor just isn't understanding. Well, they have the best intentions, right? Aren't understanding what they're doing and how far they're setting the student back in that. So, as somebody who observes that kind of stuff, I'm like, again, they're probably the best intentions.
Well,
Awesome.
the value is not in how much information you give the students. The value is in what you're able to help them prioritize, right? Because if I give them everything that my brain knows about how to grip the firearm, they're probably not going to get the hang of it as much as if I were to prioritize the top two things they need to know to grip the firearm. You know what I mean? So the value is in how you prioritize. It's not how much information you give. And a lot of times, especially if it's like, a newer instructor or just somebody who's dealing with an ego thing, it feels good to info dump all the things that you know because it makes you feel credible. But that doesn't necessarily mean that what you're saying is going to help the other person. And this is something actually is funny because when mom started teaching or mentoring under me, one thing that I was really, really specific on having her practice was hitting time, what should I have, time frames, right? So I'm like, okay, I want you to walk through and do this private lesson. I'm going to do it with you, with like a regular student who's like just doing it for free just to get, be a part of it or whatever. Be like, I want you to teach for an hour on this subject. You cannot go past an hour. And it was funny because this exercise was really interesting because it's like everything. Like you want to tell a student all these things you want to work through, all these drills you want to throw at them. When you hit that hour, it's like, all right, were you able to summarize everything you wanted this student to learn and take away within this hour time frame? And if not, then we need to learn how to condense information and prioritize what's important. And it's really funny because like I actually learned that from her years prior, and then I had to help her work through it with the shooting stuff. So it's just kind of funny how, like I said, teaching translates, but it's also practicing. Like you have to practice hitting time limits. You have to practice like condensing information, and you have to practice articulating and things like that. And like I said, it's another reason why I think the skill of social media is good because if you're trying to make an effective video, like a reel or something on Instagram, it's beneficial for you to do it within 60 seconds. So you have to figure out how to condense whatever the heck you're going to say into 60 seconds by prioritizing information and getting rid of the fluff. Teaching is literally no different. That's why I
Right.
think it's a really beneficial. It's like almost like a practice skill. Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but in my
Yeah.
mind, it correlates.
No, it does. And I think about the data thing that we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation and stuff. It's like, I think too often instructors and teachers, right, they'll focus on the value provided. Like, oh, well, here's my curriculum, here's my resume, look how awesome I am, how much, shit, I get to wear on my sleeve. You should respect me, and I like you're paying this money to get all this stuff, and you're looking at that data, which is great, but you're not looking at the value that's like delivered. I
Right.
would 10 out of 10 times, I would rather have five really, really useful pieces of information or feedback to me as a shooter, right,
Yeah.
than 25 pieces that are like. That I don't know what to do with. Like,
Right.
maybe I'll be able to, after some deep thought and reflection the next day or something, like, oh, maybe that's what they meant. And you have those moments in like just in general when, oh, hey, you'll figure it out and you'll get a light bulb moment 3 weeks after class or something, but you don't want that to be the standard you operate off of,
Yeah, I'm greedy with my light bulbs. I want my light bulbs in front of me where I can see them. Like that's what I'm looking for. Collect them like Pokemon cards. Like that's important. We want
Yeah,
light
you
bulbs.
want to hit the big items. And so people walk away, even if it's only a couple of things, like they're big things, and they're going to walk away feeling like, hey, I took a ton away from this. I'm going to be back. I want more. I want to do more. I want to be better.
Right, exactly. And also, like I said, from a business perspective, if I can get a student in a seat 6 times as opposed to one or two, and I can get them in the seat where they're learning little bits of information. They're ready for the next part. They're like chomping at the bit, like, okay, what's the next thing I'm gonna learn? Oh my goodness. That's a lot better feeling and experience than feeling inundated with information and overwhelmed. Because especially when you're dealing with beginner shooters, they're already coming in the door nervous and stressed out. They might have had a bad experience at another place or with, whatever happened in their life. Like, so they're already coming in with these emotions and this tension. So it's kind of your job to break down those barriers by making them feel like they're not just going to get a fire hose of information. So yeah, that I guess that's I guess in a nutshell what I believe in teaching wise. I'm sure it will adjust and change as I go forward, but over the last 5 years, that's kind of what I've gathered.
Yeah, no, I it's it's a well-informed position, and that's not to say anything bad about anybody else I've talked to, but I always feel like I need to say that just because everyone draws comparisons. But like, yeah, teaching is a like it's a constantly evolving thing, and it's different for everybody. And like, I always love hearing like other perspectives from people, and you can start to see like people are really good teachers. They kind of hit on the same wavelengths, and then people who don't, they kind of just talk about the concepts a lot and they really harp on that. And again, not that there's not value there, but like, are you being effective?
Well, and it also really helps, like you gotta be humble enough to learn from other instructors too. Like it really helps to find a couple instructors that you see a lot of value in, or you really like how they break things down, and just watch and absorb their information, because you are who you surround yourself by. And the nice thing about social media nowadays is you can surround yourself by people who are so many levels above you, not in like a personal sense, but like let's just say, like shooting wise, so many levels above you, or business wise, so many like steps ahead of you. You can surround yourself with those people without even knowing them, which is like the coolest thing ever. Because if you want to learn anything about those subjects, all you have to do is like binge watch content or read their books. And it's basically like you're surrounding yourself with those people. And just by osmosis from you just being around them and listening to their information, you're going to start to kind of take after their habits. Like there's tons of good instructors out there that for the longest time I would just sit there and like listen to in my car. Like I would turn on their YouTube, I would like turn my brain off while I was driving on a road trip, and I would just like absorb everything they were saying. Like Mark Smith from JBS Training Group, Ben Stoger, like those guys who are like phenomenal at what they do and they're really good at breaking down information. I would just try to absorb as much as I possibly could from them, and whether they know it or not, like they taught me a lot and I'm very appreciative of it.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had anybody that you like you drew inspiration from out there in the community. I know there's a lot in the competitive space that do a good job with it, and certainly Ben is, I think, kind of synonymous in a lot of circles for being a really, really good shooter, as well
Love
as I
racer.
think
Yeah,
a good
absolutely.
teacher. He's got, I don't know, four or five books out, I think, now on like everything from dry fire to practical shooting and in between and stuff. So like, yeah, that's a big one for
That's what
sure.
I'm saying. It's like these guys, they put everything you need to know out there. You just gotta like find it, like read it. Like his books are amazing. I'm trying to think of like those are the first two that came to mind, obviously, when I think of like who I've tried to take after from a distance at least. Like those guys are really awesome. I do also see a lot of value in written material. I'm a big reader in all sorts of different aspects, but like I do see a lot of value in written material. I've learned that it helps from a business perspective, and also it helps the students retain information. If you can give them the information verbally, show them physically, you can give them like a book, a textbook, a handbook, a journal, whatever it is, so that when they go home, they see pictures, they see videos, they see like they have little quizzes and stuff. Like anything you can do to hit them with the information as many times as possible, you're gonna have somebody come out pretty robust from your class, and that's a really good thing to do. I think that's where a lot of the value is too, is I think it's good to try to hit as many aspects of learning as possible within a short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to process it differently. That is the difficult part, right? It's like a moving target because every new student, you have to kind of begin that like assessment process, like how am I going to help bridge the gap here? How am I going to make it work for them, while also in the overarching, how am I going to keep the group on the same page, in this class? where it's like you don't want to leave anyone behind, and but you still want people to feel like you're moving forward. And it's kind of a juggling act. It is difficult, you know.
Yeah.
It and with all that stuff, like you said, it's even on the teaching side of it, because that's starting to become a very popular subject, I think, in our community, but in other realms too, like how to teach and stuff. That stuff's all out there, but
Yeah.
it is wild to me how lazy basically people are these days. They're like, I don't have time for that. I'm not gonna watch that. I'm not gonna listen. People don't read anymore. You know, there's studies out there with if you don't make your caption on your post or whatever, like 13 words or less, you're already gonna lose people or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's studies on it,
Yeah.
and it is wild how small that
Right.
like window to grab people is.
And like my thing is too is we're not afraid to grab from other industries as well. For example, the fitness industry is a phenomenal business model for coaching, like phenomenal. Pretty much after a couple of years, we started structuring all of our programs off of like logistics wise off of fitness, like the fitness model. Or for example, like you can learn a lot from other businesses, even if they're not in the shooting industry per se. You can learn a lot from other instructors who are teaching other subjects. Shoot, you can even learn from like college professors who are teaching their class a certain way. Like latch on, like find things that you like, figure out why you like them, and then apply them to what you're doing. I think that there's a lot of value there.
Can you give an example on the fitness side? 'Cause like, I'm not big on fitness programs. Like, I work out. I should be bigger on fitness programs, 'cause I'd probably get a lot further faster.
Yeah.
But my mind goes to like just the dumbest of pop culture. Like, I'm thinking like, you know, Richard S Simmons and jazzercising, and like,
Oh
you know what I mean? Like,
no, not like that.
that's like when people say like, oh yeah, I'm on this great fitness program. Like, yeah, my mom used to have those on VHS back in the day. Yeah, for
That's
sure.
funny. No, I mean more in the sense of like, okay, if you go to the gym, so let me compare this to like a class, the typical class for beginner shooters, right? If a shooter goes to a class one time and then never takes a class again, that's comparable to somebody going to the gym for like, I don't know, like a hour or so and then never going again. There's no muscle built in between because there's no repetition happening. So the thing is with the shooting industry, I think a lot of times we get very used to taking a class and then just abandoning the information. Not everybody, because a lot of people, like, I'm not talking about higher level people who go home and dry fire and stuff. I'm talking
Oh, of
about
course. Yeah.
beginner level shooters who are basically told if you take this class, you're good to go. That happens a lot with concealed carry too, because obviously a lot of states mandate it. They say if you take this class, you're good to go. That is a mentality that's being driven into students' head without them realizing it, and innocently they don't realize how that affects them because they're not capable of doing the things they think they're capable of doing. So it's the same thing as the gym where it's like, yes, you need somebody to help you do the form right when you're lifting. You need somebody to help you design a nutrition plan that's going to work for you and your lifestyle. But in between those like little information sessions, you need to be going to the gym every day and getting the reps. So with fitness programs, the thing about it is that they typically, like, everybody's obviously a little bit different, but they'll do like videos or they'll do bits of information where they're like, hey, we want you to do this, and this. And then they'll help them track their progress between sessions. So the big o the overlap that I'm getting at is that the tracking between sessions is where all the magic happens. But in the shooting industry, you don't really see that much. So and with a beginner shooter, like I said, that's really, really important because what happens is even if they do go home and practice, they're 9 times out of 10, they're probably building some bad habits that they don't even know they're building, right? So where the coaching comes in is like, okay, you take intro class, and now we're going to hold you accountable and see what you're doing and help you out until you take your next class. So a lot of our programs are designed in that way, which again, we've taken from the fitness industry, and I think that's really valuable. You can learn a lot from other industries. But yeah, I think that's, to be honest with you, one of the things that sets us apart. And honestly, it's one of the things that's helped me scale the business. So, I think there's a lot to learn out there. And every time I think that we got to figure it out, something else comes up, or I read something in a book and I'm like, wow, I know nothing. So it's like, it's just this never ending process of evolving the business and trying to figure out better ways to do things. So yeah, that's kind of like my idea of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the follow through is huge, especially when you talk about the time between courses. Because I've talked to people who have taken tens, over 50, right, courses, and you see performance, right, between somebody who's taken five classes, somebody maybe who's taken 25 or 50, you know, whatever or more, right? And why is the disparity not larger there? And I think it's because of what you just mentioned, is that the real, like, you get the information in class, but the real growth isn't in class, it's from what you take away with class between those two.
It's
And
yes, exactly. Oh, sorry,
yeah,
no,
and
go
people, no, I mean, I'm just gonna say, people miss that. They think, like you said, like going through the class and like checking the box is like, okay, cool, I leveled up, bro. What's next?
Yeah,
Then that's it.
exactly. Like the class is how we're going to help you understand the concept, teach you how to do it, tell you why we're doing what we're doing. But the muscle memory is going to happen with coaching in between the class and the next class, because that's how we structure our program, right? Because we're on like level one, level two, level three, whatever it is. And the biggest thing is too, is you don't want to progress a student into the next level of class if they still haven't mastered what they learned in the first class, because at that point, like,
Yeah.
you're just compiling on there's no foundation. There's no foundation there. You're building it on sand at that point. So that's, like I said, that's how we do things, and it seems to be working pretty well for us. We have quite a few students who are doing pretty well. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants to hear it, right? Like, hey, you should probably go back and, or you're not even go back. You're not ready to move forward yet. You need to figure some things out. And it's, I mean, it's different than like we're in school, right? Like, shit happens. Life happens. Like, you, hey, how much time did you spend on the range? Like 6 hours this entire month. Probably not gonna get where you need to be. Like, well, I've had all this other stuff going on. Hey, you don't have to explain it to me. I understand. I'm trying to help you get where you want to be. And an educator, that's sometimes the responsibility or the burden or a plain just bad luck of having to deliver that message to someone. Like, hey, I know you really wanted to do the next thing. You're just not ready for that.
And I think students are looking for, can you help me master this skill? They're not looking for tell me how to do this skill. That's not what they're looking for. They're looking for, help me get really good at this skill. And so it doesn't require that much time. I think that's also a misconception, is that like if you're going to be a capable shooter or so capable of defending your family, I think people think it's going to take like 2 hours a day. And I'm like, absolutely not. 15 minutes remotely with your coach talking through things or going through a quick drill or whatever every couple of days, like that's enough. That's more than enough to get proficient at whatever we're working on, because the skills aren't difficult, or they're not complicated. They're simple. They take time and reps, and good reps, right? But yeah, I totally agree.
Well, and I think people's perception of time invested versus actual like time invested is never as accurate as they'd like it to be. Like, I spent over the weekend, I was dry firing in my base when I found that like Dry Fire King YouTube channel where they like the
Oh,
different
Dry Fire
temperatures.
King's awesome.
And I was like, oh, I turned this on, and you know, it was probably like a 20-minute stage or something or whatever. And my wife was out, I think, with her book club, and she comes, oh, what'd you do? I'm like, I was downstairs, I was dry firing for about an hour, and I thought about it, I was like, yeah, no, it was probably close to like half an hour. It always just feels like it feels like so much longer, or at least for me, right? So then when people think they're putting in so much time, it's like, no, you don't have to. Like, that felt like an hour and a half because of whatever, but it was actually only about 20 minutes of your time. And if you felt like you actually got better at anything, right? Leading with your eyes, transitioning, your reload, like whatever. Cool. Then that's all it took. You just proved the point that it doesn't take 2 hours. It takes 15 or 20 minutes a day of just dedicated, uninterrupted practice. You will get better. And that's the progressive activity that you're looking for.
Intentional focus with literally any skill. Exactly. It's like take for example, this is another side trail, but take for example, like for us, a big part of what scaled Red Letter is me investing in sales training. I didn't realize that's a skill I needed to have. It makes sense looking back at it because I own a business, but like coming from a background of not having any of that type of area of focus, I guess, in my formal education or my other career, that is something I never even thought of. But it was funny, the last, I guess, about the last year or so, minus being gone 6 months of the year for the deployment, anytime I possibly could, I have a friend named David. He's awesome. He's one of my best friends. It's so funny because I was like, hey, I'm learning the sales stuff. I don't need a lot of your time, but as my best friend, or as one of my best friends, will you get on the phone with me for 15 minutes so I can practice it? And like, it was so funny because we would get on the phone We just spontaneously call each other like once a day. And for 15 minutes, I would try to give the best, most efficient, and most value-driven pitch for our program that I possibly could. 15 minutes a day, all it took. And sometimes we would miss a couple days here and there or whatever. But like
Yeah.
those little 15-minute sessions, I can't tell you the amount of value I got out of them. It was better than going through a business degree. It was better than going through a 6-month sales training program. What I'm saying is just that, like, you don't have to be putting a lot of time in one short, or you don't have to put a lot of time into one sitting for it to be helpful. You can put little bits of time throughout a whole week, and it's going to be even more beneficial to you. Consistency is not always just doing the same thing in the same amount of time every single day. Sometimes, some days you might do less than others, but as long as you at least touch on that skill as frequently as possible, you're going to get somewhere. That's
No,
pretty
I
much
mean, yeah, and like I used to when I was a bank teller, I used to hate that shit. It was
it
role playing, and we would do a huddle before we opened the door or whatever, and
was.
if we'll just pick two you guys to try and work on getting, we wanted to get people over to the banker to sit down and sales stuff, whatever. And it used to irritate the shit out of me because it was like me and one of the other tellers. I worked with all women, so it was me and one of the girls every time. I was like, can you please pick like another, like, do I have to do this every morning?
That's
And
funny.
like, I think 'cause the management didn't actually like me. They knew I didn't like it. But the
Yeah.
ironic part is then when we like got to where numbers were bad and like, oh, we'll have a sales competition. Whoever refers the most is going to get whatever, like a Tim Hortons gift card or something. And I
Yeah.
think I like they did four of them and I did not win the first one, but I won the next three consecutively. And then they stopped doing it. And they're like, why? Like, well, no one else even tried anymore. I was like, so why?
I'm
I
good
can't
at
have
it.
a coffee. Like,
So give me a pay bump.
yeah, I was like, all right, cool, I guess. But it's just weird because that, yeah, that repetition, like you said, like I didn't even want to go through it at that point. And then I ended up doing, investments for a couple of years and I got away from that because I just hated, I
Well,
did
and
not love it the way I thought, but.
it's not fun. It's never going to be fun. To be honest with you, half the time I don't thoroughly enjoy my dry fire sessions, but I get what I need out of them, right? Like, it's like I'm a firm believer in, like, one of the best character traits you can develop is just doing things you don't like to do on days you don't want to do them. So it's like every time I hopped on the call with David, in our minds, we'd both be like, oh my gosh, make it in. I hate this. I hate being role player. I hate being the person that's trying to pitch something. Like, I hate it. I hate it so much. But like I said, it's worth it. It's always worth doing the work that sucks. I tell that to students too. It's like, I know it sucks to have to disrupt your night with your family to like put on your shooting belt for 15 minutes and go do something that you normally wouldn't do. That absolutely sucks. I do mine early in the morning because I don't want it disrupting my day. But the point is that, like, it's not convenient. The stuff that's going to help you grow the most is never going to be convenient. It's going to be probably the most inconvenient thing that you're avoiding at all times. That's going to be the thing that spurs you forward the fastest.
Isn't it, and it's stupid too, like you said, putting on the belt. Like I
Yeah.
just that's the part that stops me half the time when I stop.
It
I'm
is
like,
100%.
I don't want
It's
to take the belt
the
off. I gotta put on the
small
stupid inner belt, and then I gotta put on the
things.
and then when I like once I actually do it, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like I'm fine. I'm just like,
Exactly.
I don't wanna do this. It's just kind of fucking annoying, right? And it's
Yeah.
really silly, but
It's the same thing with going to the gym. Like 90% of the time, if I don't want to go to the gym, it's just because I don't feel like putting my contacts in and going and driving to the gym. It has nothing to do with lifting. It has more to do with, like, wow, I'm inconvenienced because I don't want to do these small mundane tasks in order to get to the gym safely. Like,
Right.
that's what usually bugs me, and I totally relate to this. Actually, it's funny because, as a female, normally I'm wearing like gym shorts or leggings that most likely don't have belt loops on them unless I'm going to do like a shooting event or something. And yeah, it's a massive pain to put on my inner belt because I got to change into jeans. Or I got to change into some sort of pants that have belt loops. And like, it's a massive pain, but it's a deterrence to what you're trying to achieve. And if you can start to like slowly figure out what those little deterrences are, you can mitigate them. But you have to be aware of, why you don't want to do something. I think that's part of the battle. Like, part of the battle we didn't want to do sales calls is because we were just getting our ass kicked the entire time. It's like every time you would roll an objection, your friend would throw another one at you, and you would just constantly be humbled, and it sucks. It's the same thing with, like, I did competitive martial arts for like 8 years, right? It was the same thing going up to the gym, where it's like every single day I show up to this gym, I end up just getting completely whipped. Like, it's like Every single day I'm coming home, I didn't win a single roll, or like I was just getting smashed the whole night, or I kept getting
Yeah.
punched in the face, whatever. Like, it doesn't get better most of the time. That's just part of it. But
Yeah.
that's the part that is just like, you know what to expect, you know it sucks, you know it's gonna deter you, but you have to work through it. And part of that mental battle is what makes you so strong.
Yeah, and that's the biggest part of it is mentally, if you can get yourself past that, like it starts to, I think at some point you kind of realize like, well, if I can do this, like, well, what else have I not been doing that I could be doing?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Or like, what distractions are causing you to, give
Oh, yeah.
excuses to why you're not doing this. Like, a fun little experiment for business owners out there is like, take a sticky note, and every time you pick up your phone throughout the day, put a little tally mark, and you will be absolutely shocked at how many times you're pulled away from what you're supposed to be focusing on just to check a stupid text message or to check Instagram or whatever. It's like, we always complain about not having enough time in the day to do all the things we need to do for the business. Yet, if you look on your phone and look at the like little screen that tells you all the data, it will be humbling because it's humbling for me on a daily basis to look back and be like, wow, I spent however many hours it was, like, either on my phone doing something or whatever it is. So it's, just being aware of what the vices are, I think, are
And
important.
I hate when people are like, oh, I gotta find the time to do this. I need to dry fire more. I'm like, you don't need to find the time. You know where the time is. It didn't go anywhere. You're just not prioritizing your time effectively enough. And people like, I had that conversation with my twin brother, and he does not like hearing it. But I'm like, listen, it's fine. Like, I'm not telling you you're a bad person. I'm just telling you, like, you have the time to do it. What is this more important than? Do you need to sit down on the couch for an hour every night? Or could you sit down for half an hour and then dry fire for half an hour? Like, where do we draw the line here, buddy? Like, you can do this. You can. You just need to do it.
People find the time and the money to do things they want to do. A good example of this
100%.
is, so like my dog, right? Bear with me here. My dog, we found him as a puppy on our, actually my a group of my staff was driving the, like, they were all carpooling down to the event, and we were going to an event down in South Georgia. It was, I think, red letter number event number 7 or something like that. I don't remember. Anyway, they were driving their car down this like little back road, and they saw this little black blob on the side of the road, and they're like, "Oh, what is that?" And they pulled over. It was this little malnourished puppy. He was probably a couple weeks old, right? So they pick up the puppy, they bring him to the event, and I saw him, and from the first second, I was like, "This is my dog. This is my dog." And the funny thing is like, I travel like 2 weeks out in the month. Occasionally, it's like I said, this last year I was on a 6 month deployment. My schedule is not conducive to owning a dog at
Yeah,
all.
it's rough. That's a little rough, yeah.
It is rough, right? However, when I realized that I wanted that dog to be in my life, and I think he wanted me to be a part of his life, like, it was a perfect fit. I feel like God put him in my life for a reason. I made the time, the money, and the energy to make sure it happened, and to make sure he was taken care of. Now, obviously, I'm blessed enough to have parents that can watch him and stuff, but what I'm saying is like, I made the time and the effort to make sure it happened because I wanted it really badly. If I didn't want it really badly, I would have been just like, "Ah, oh, I don't have the time. I travel a lot." So it's a
Right.
bad analogy, but I'm just saying, like, anything in life that's worth like putting the effort into, you'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
Things are not as impossible as they seem.
No, that's 100% true with anything. And Maddie, we're coming up on time, and I unbelievable because I think we're pushing like an hour and 20 or something close to that. But where Well, one, thank you so much again for joining me. But if people have questions, if they want to know more, or maybe they want to sign up for a class or one of the programs, where are you on social media? Where can people get a hold of you? I think you guys have a website, and I know you're on Instagram, but if you can throw that out there for the listeners.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So we do everything from large scale women's retreats, usually about once or twice a year. We also do remote training, so pretty much anywhere in the country, wherever you're at, we can train with you. We also do local in-person classes and stuff like that near the Atlanta area. So if you have any interest in training, or if you have questions, or you want to talk to me about something that said on the podcast, whatever it is, you can contact me either through our website, which is www.theredletterproject.com, or our Instagram, which is redletterproject.official. I think that's the same across all the platforms like YouTube, Twitter, all that stuff.
Okay.
Or you can go to my personal page, which is at Madison Scholar. We also have a really large, well, in my mind, it's relatively large, student private Facebook group that you're more than welcome to join. Basically, what I do is I use my network in the industry to bring in subject matter experts from all over the place, all different disciplines. And what they do is they'll typically post about once a week, just free information on things like survival stuff. We got super squad level shooters in there. We got nutritionists in there, just self-defense, like the whole nine. We got all sorts of different areas of expertise, and they post free information constantly in that group. So it's called the Red Letter Project Forum, I believe is what we still call it. Feel free to join that as well. That's a lot of just free information and a good way to connect with our community.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that I honestly, if you guys are listening, you have questions, like reach out. I tell listeners all the time, like I wonder how many people actually reach out, but like the people that are willing to come on and share their stories, the information, it's not just for like, I mean it is for fun, right? But like there's a vested interest in seeing people succeed. So like if you have even an inkling of a question, like feel free to reach out. You might be surprised at what you find, or whether it's a group of people even, to expound on what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a yapper, so I love talking about things like this. So feel free to reach out. One last note, if it's okay. We also are really, like I said, we're mission focused. We love doing things in the Atlanta area. We work with a lot of like shelters, and we do a lot of mission projects and service projects and things like that in the area. So if you are local to Atlanta, we are always looking for volunteers and people who are interested in stuff like that. So feel free to reach out. And yeah, like I said, open door, open email, whatever's easiest to contact me for or with, I'm happy to talk.
Awesome. Yeah, no, 100%. And this has been great. Hopefully we can connect in the future, do it again. We'll be in touch, Maddie. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
So that's like an incredibly cool conversation, guys. Like, man, the work that Maddie's doing, and I shouldn't even just say that. Like Maddie, her mom, the whole, the staff, the cadre, right, at Red Letter. It is a different spin, I guess, is putting it mildly, right? It's a different approach to bringing value to people through not just the value of firearm skills, because there's a lot, there's definitely a lot to be said for being able to defend yourself, your home, your family, all that. Like, I don't ever want to underplay that, obviously, but there's a lot to be said of delivering value through the training, what it can provide for you on a mental level, a spiritual and emotional level, where it's not only the skill you're walking away from, it's the inner development, and what she talked about a lot. Like, I'm specifically thinking of like what she was able to share with us about the retreats and the work that she's able to do with people who've been through, incredible trauma in their life, whether it's domestic abuse or something. And I know that there are those of you listening that have family members, friends, potentially even spouses, right, who in their life have experienced domestic abuse. It's a problem, it's a terrible thing, and a lot of times we don't find out about it until much later after the fact, and it's an incredibly powerful thing in somebody's life. Powerful in some of the worst ways. And I was young when things happened, and then I find out later in my life that my grandmother was a victim of domestic abuse by, I don't even want to call him my grandfather. Getting in fights and him dragging her across the kitchen floor and things like that. Like, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't share that. I don't know. But I feel like you need to share that it happens to everybody. Like, I love my grandmother dearly, and it wasn't until long after she unfortunately had passed on that I found those things out. And even after I found out, or that he had passed on when I found that out, but it changes your perspective on things. It incites a lot of feelings, and that's as somebody who's not the victim, not involved. It's a tremendous part of people's lives, so to be able to bring to folks a way to cope, to overcome, to triumph over that evil in your life, if you're somebody who's able to bring that to someone, you're doing more than just, you know, good work teaching somebody how to run a gun. You know, you're bringing something that goes, it transcends, I think that's the word I'm looking for, right? It transcends that traditional value that we see delivered from firearms instructors. And that's not to take anything away from anybody else. I think that there's a lot of people that are trying to impact people in more than just the flat range, you know, way. But I'll be honest with you. This is a conversation that is very, very different for me from what I've had with a lot of other folks. And certainly we got into the teaching piece and I've talked about teaching, you know, that's a big part of my life and who I am as a person. Certainly we've discussed that, but man, you know, aside from that, I think aside from the teaching part, you have to focus on how well it is being done, but like what's being, you're not just teaching people a skill. It's the journey, not the destination. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to get like overly philosophical with you guys, but it's the journey, not just the destination. And we talk about the power that those kinds of journeys have on us. It's never that you just made it cross country. It's everything that happened from New York to LA, right? It's everything you experienced and saw in between, right? Like it really is. So I hope you guys took away from this conversation as much as I did, or at least enjoyed it as much as I did. I really did. I thought this was incredible. And I loved hearing Maddie's story, and I loved hearing about the work that she's doing with Red Letter. And if you guys are in the Georgia area, you know, whether that's in a neighboring state or whatever, like or in Georgia proper itself, like I implore you, look them up or take advantage of the online resources too if you're not in Georgia. But like, this is very different. That's the best word. This is very different from other things that I've been exposed to. And guys, I don't want to say I'm like the do-all end-all expert here, and I'm not trying to take away from the work that anybody else is doing. Absolutely would hate to do that. Do not want to do that. Will not do that. But I will say that this is very different. And I think that this is one of the most inspiring conversations and stories I've heard in a while on the podcast. And this is episode 318, which is wild. I love saying it. I love saying that we're over 300 episodes. It shows it's a lot. I don't want to get into it. I don't want to take away from this, but you know, in those discussions, I've met some tremendously just incredible human beings. Happy I can now, I will gladly add, you know, Maddie to that list of people who I am just blown away by what they're able to do with their life and how they're able to change this world based off of their faith, based off of obviously their own interests, like what drives them and their passions, not like their interest is in I'm making money, but like it's an interest of theirs. They found a way to make it into a career path, and now I've even taken it in, you know, beyond that. So cool, you guys. I really just can't, I could go on. But I do hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much for tuning into this streaming. I don't want to say tuning in because it's not a freaking radio. I shouldn't say that. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just old because I'm turning 36 the next couple of days here. But I digress. You know, I hope you guys took some powerful things away from this discussion and are going to reach out to Maddie if you have questions, if you want to explore what Red Letter is able to maybe help you with or how you can grow with them. Appreciate you guys supporting this. If you enjoyed the discussion, if you're here for the first time, please go ahead and hit the subscribe button. That helps out so incredibly much. And we are working on bringing, you know, more guests, more discussions, you know, every week we're working on this stuff, trying to do better, trying to bring better to you guys. If you have feedback, obviously, always happy to hear it. Send me, got emails on night vision stuff last week, which is really, really cool to see. But if you guys have any feedback, leave a comment, send an email, drop a DM in our Instagram, check out the YouTube channel. We're always working on something. But that's all I have for you guys for this week's iteration of the Prepared Mindset Podcast. Thank you all so much. Stay safe out there. And until next time, like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.